Hello, my name is Andre Mackin, Director and President of the Comprehensive Autism Center. I'm pleased today to be presenting proactive tools to manage challenging behaviors during Autism Awareness Month. Hopefully during this presentation, we will be able to provide you the principles of applied behavioral analysis and give parents, caregivers, and professionals proactive tools to manage their child's behaviors. In addition, we'll hopefully be going over identifying patterns of the child's challenging behaviors, including triggers and functions of these behaviors. So we're looking at the autism spectrum disorder. We know that children on the spectrum have different challenges that they might face. We look at challenges in communication, socialization, and stereotyped routine-based behaviors. In addition to these challenges, we'll find impairments that parents may face, which will include challenging behaviors. Some of the behaviors that we often see with children on the spectrum include not following daily instructions. It could include something like as easy as put on your shoes, come to the table to eat. And it can lead to tantrum behaviors, which can look like falling to the floor, crying, screaming, which could be in the home or in the public or out in the community or at school. Some other behaviors that we might see are aggression towards self or others. We might find children in tantrums also hitting themselves or biting others, or can include spitting or throwing objects. The other behaviors we might see are the stereotypic behaviors and patterns and routines. Some of the stereotypic behaviors may look like hand flapping, repetition of scripts or scenes that they've seen from videos or books. Some of the routines you might see are inflexibilities with some daily routines, maybe going the same way to the park, eating out of the same bowl, having toys placed in a very specific location. So some rigidity and routines with that. So as many of you know, changing a child's behavior is far from easy, so many of you maybe have tried with mixed results. So we want to explore some proactive tools that we maybe can use to divert problem behaviors. But before we can even look at changing a child's behavior, we want to first understand why children engage in these behaviors. So why do children do what they do? We figure this out by using the ABC pattern. The ABC pattern will help us identify why behaviors occur, look at finding out what the triggers are to these behaviors, and assist in using proactive procedures to manage these problem behaviors. We want to understand why behaviors occur so that we don't reinforce them and the behaviors continue. Finding out what the triggers of behaviors helps us predict when a behavior may occur and when to use those proactive tools. For example, we might know that Johnny might have a problem with going a different way to the park, so we know we can plan ahead if we have to make a change in routine. So let's look over some common behavior problems that we might see through the ABC pattern. The A we're looking at is Johnny is playing outside on the playground structure. Mom is sitting on a bench and tells him that it's time to go. Mom gets up to get Johnny. B, Johnny says no and refuses to go. Johnny starts running away. C, Mom chases Johnny and repeatedly tells him to stop. She finally catches him after a couple of rounds around the park. That's one scenario through a problem behavior through the ABC pattern. If we look at another one, we'll see A, it's bedtime. Sarah is a 6-year-old girl who is playing with her dolls in her bedroom. Mom asks Sarah to come brush her teeth. Sarah protests no and continues playing with her doll. Finally, Mom says, okay, you can play for 5 more minutes. Then you have to come brush your teeth. That may be a common scenario with problem behaviors. Another scenario we might look at is Brian is a seven-year-old boy, nonverbal boy, who's out with his family in a restaurant. He has been waiting for 20 minutes for his food, and the food has not come. B, Brian begins to tantrum. C, Dad takes him outside so that he can walk him around until the food comes. These may be common behaviors that you might see with children, but what I wanted to illustrate is just being able to put behaviors into an ABC pattern. So let's look at how to do that. So what exactly is the ABC pattern? The A is the antecedent. The B is the behavior. The C is the consequence. when you're looking at the A, those are the triggers of behaviors. And the questions that you want to ask are, what happened? So what was going on when Joni was at the restaurant, or when Brian was at the restaurant? He was there during dinner time. He had been waiting for 20 minutes. Where was he? Where he was at a restaurant. When did this happen? This happened during dinner time, a very crowded time. Who was there? His family. So those questions that you will ask will help you identify triggers to children's behaviors. Then the B is the child's behavior. The questions you want to ask yourself are, what did the child do? And how long did it last? Johnny had a tantrum. It lasted until Dad came, which is C, the consequence. What happened after the behavior? What happened with Johnny is Dad took him outside and walked him around. So being able to put a challenging behavior in an ABC pattern will help us find out what the triggers are, define exactly what the behavior is, and what the function of the behavior. So ABC patterns help us identify why problems behavior occur. When we see a child using a behavior that works to accomplish the goal, he will use that behavior again and again. And when looking at applied behavioral analysis, we know that if a child's behavior has a specific function, they will use it again and again. So with Johnny, maybe tantruming function to get him out of a situation, so he may tantrum again. For Sarah, she used her behavior to escape task for cleaning up, so she was able to play with her dollies a little bit longer before brushing her teeth. Now, when we're looking at the function of behavior, the consequence is what happened. Functions of behavior can serve as attention. And this can be misleading because it might be positive attention. It might be attention that is a smile or a laugh or a giggle, or it could even be in the form of a reprimand. So, no, don't do that. Could also be a form of attention. Another function of behavior is the child might receive an object or an activity. So a child might cry and then be offered several choices of food and then eventually end up with a cookie. So crying serves the function of receiving something, getting an object or a cookie. For the instance of the example of Sarah, she protested no, and she received being able to play with her dolls for 5 more minutes. And it also served for her as number 3, as an escape or delay of an unpreferred activity. So the 3 functions of the behavior are attention, which can be positive attention or a reprimand. It could be receiving an object or receiving an activity. Could be a cookie, could be playing with something. Number 3 could be escape or delay of an unpreferred activity. Parent may ask a child to clean up the toys, and the child doesn't ever get to clean up the toys, and the parents end up cleaning the toys. So that often occurs. So the ABC pattern can help us figure out the triggers and antecedents to problem behaviors. Hopefully when you're looking at this, you'll be able to start looking at putting your child's challenging behaviors in this ABC pattern to identify those triggers. So let's look at that. A is the antecedent, the triggers. What, where, when, why, who. Looking at the behavior, and then C, the consequences again. The functions of the behavior, attention, object or activity, or 3, escape or delay. So knowing this, we'll be able to use the proactive tools to reduce and manage those problem behaviors, use positive methods, which include proactive strategies and teaching replacement behaviors. So tools that you can use before problem behavior occur is, many of you, if we know what the triggers are and we know the warning signs, we can start giving children transitions, giving 5-minute cues, 5-minute warnings, 5 more minutes before we have to clean up, 3 more minutes before we have to clean up, 1 more minute before we have to clean up. So it gives the child transitions so they have warnings so that they're not surprised when an instruction occurs. Other things we want to do is that we want to give clear expectations of what is going to happen so that they're able to transition to make good transitions. First we're going to eat and then we may play outside. This can be helpful. Number 3, parents want to make sure that they're prepared. You want to examine the triggers for children. So if you know when you say, let's go inside, the child's going to run away. You want to be prepared and be close before you deliver instructions. Four, some other proactive strategies that you can use are using visual schedules or picture schedules to help the child be prepared for what's coming up next. Picture schedules can be used for maybe washing your hands, for daily activities. First, we're going to eat breakfast, then we're going to get dressed, then we're going to watch TV, and then we're going to go get on the bus to go to school. Other proactive strategies that you can use before behaviors occur are social stories. A lot of the things that we use models from Carol Gray, and I put a link on here from the Gray Center where you can learn how to write social stories. But what we like to do with these social stories is write a specific social story for the child. For example, Brian going to the restaurant is read the social story before you go into the restaurant. Practice those social stories with the target behaviors you would like to see. Six is that you always want to reinforce good behavior. You have to catch your child being good and reinforce. If you see your child sitting at the table, reinforce them. I like the way you're sitting at the table like a big boy. That is it's easy to forget and forget that your child is being good. It's easy to attend to the negative behaviors. So you always want to try to catch them being good, praise them when they're doing a great job, listening on the first try, sitting like a big boy. Other things that I like to use when we're looking at proactive strategies is to use a token system. This helps with children to remind them when they're on track for behaviors. So sometimes I will set up a token system for each time you put a toy away. There may be several toys on the floor, and I'll say, every time you put a toy away, you'll get a smiley face. Once you get all your five smiley faces, we're going to go for a piggyback ride. So every toy that they put away, they get a smiley face on their token system. As soon as they get five more, all five, immediately they get a piggyback ride. Token systems help children follow and track their progress towards a goal. Other strategies that I like to use are breaking down and simplifying activities. Sometimes we might present an activity that is too large or too big for a child, so I like to break it down and make it simpler. A big activity might be setting the table, and that would include putting out placemats, plates, forks, knives, spoons, cups, napkins, and to ask a child that's learning something with that many steps might be difficult. So we might just start breaking down the activities. He might just start with just putting all the placemats out and just reinforcing that. So making sure that you're reinforcing smaller, simpler tasks instead of a whole sequence of events or whole activity, setting the table or getting dressed. Getting dressed can be broken down into simpler activities, into simpler tasks. So instead of asking the child to get dressed, which may cause a behavior, you might just ask the child put on a sock and reinforce that, and then help the child with the rest of the dressing. Once the child can successfully put on socks appropriately, then you might ask for two steps, putting on socks, then putting on shoes, and then help with the rest. So that you're not setting up the child for a behavior, you're breaking it down to simpler things that they think that they can accomplish, and it's easier to reinforce. That goes along with the number nine, is reduce the amount of work. So, which may lead to a behavior if a child thinks that there's too much work to do, then reduce the amount of work. Oftentimes, I'll ask children to clean up their toys before we go on to the next thing, but I know that there's a lot of toys that are out, so I'll minimize and put away some of them, and then I'll give the instruction to clean up toys so that it is an accomplishable goal for them. So you want to reduce the amount of work so that the child is able to accomplish the instruction that you're giving them. Number 10 is arrange the environment. Reduce or remove the amount of distractions. Some children are overloaded with sensory information, visual distractions, noise distractions, movement distractions. So I will reduce the amount of distractions to them. So one way of arranging the environment is, in the example of Brian going to the restaurant, is go to the restaurant when it's not busy. So if you pick a busy time, there's a lot of people in the restaurant, a lot of noise, a lot of waiting time for your food. So plan ahead. Practice when the restaurant's not busy. And the other ways of arranging an environment is remove. If there's too many toys around or too many stimuli, I will remove a lot of the stimuli and just put it away if the child has a difficulty attending and they want to touch things and are distracted by the things that are around. Number 11 is teach the child to communicate appropriately. Many of the problem behaviors that we see is due to a child not being able to communicate what their needs are. And children on the spectrum can vary in their ability to vocalize their needs. So it's not, you can use a variety of ways. You can teach them to communicate vocally through pictures, through signing, through augmented communication systems, which can be as complex as technical devices or communication boards. But the key is being able to teach them to appropriately ask for what they want. Instead of crying to get a hamburger, they can say, I want a hamburger. They can ask, and an important one to teach is to ask to be able to stop something and to tell you they don't want to do something. I want to leave the restaurant. I want to get up instead of tantruming to get out of the restaurant. Definitely want to encourage functional communication training so they can communicate their needs in an appropriate way other than through behaviors. Other skills that you might want to teach in replacement behaviors is teaching the child to follow instructions. And this is important to teach when you are at home with your child so you have several times to practice and reinforce. So even just practicing one instruction at a time. Pick up your toys. Great job, and reinforce, and you can combine that with a token system, or set the placemats down, great job, and reinforce for every placemat they put down. And it's important to teach your child to follow instructions so that when you go to these places or go out in the community, they can follow them, and starting one by one. Another one we always forget is we forget about the good behaviors the children are doing. So we want to catch our children when they are being good and reinforce them, because that's what we're looking for is when they are being good, we want to extend that. I like the way you're sitting. You're sitting so quietly at the table. You're keeping your hands down. Great job. So these are some of the proactive tools that we use. Some guidelines is when you're looking at a behavior, you want to choose one problem behavior to target, not several. It's easy to get overwhelmed with several behaviors. If you look at one behavior, you'll target that one problem behavior and put it through the ABCs of behavior. When you decide what triggers and what proactive tools you're going to use, you want to be consistent so the child knows what to expect. When you're looking at teaching a children instructions, you only want to give one instruction at a time and make sure that you follow through with those instructions, because you don't want to teach the child that they can escape instructions that you give them. When you're looking at instructing your child, you want to phrase instructions as positively. So first we're going to clean up, and then we're going to go to the park. Instead of, if you don't clean up, we're not going to the park. First, we're going to brush our teeth, and then we're going to read a book. It's a positive way. Instead of, if you don't brush your teeth, we're not reading a book. So always try to phrase your instructions positively. Again, this is a thing I cannot probably emphasize more, is catch your child being good and reinforce. You want to give attention to good behaviors. 7, when your child follows an instruction, reinforce right away. And the important part is you don't want to delay. You want to catch them right away. Reinforce. Don't wait till you get home to tell them what a great job they did at the restaurant. Tell them at the restaurant as they're doing it, or at the park as they're following instructions. When teaching a new skill or practicing, I like to practice at home so that you can arrange the environment. You can practice and feel safe in your environment. And that way the child has several chances to practice. It's harder to practice out in the community because you can't control the things that are going on out in the community. The cars, the number of people, the number of noises, there's too many factors that play in outside. So it's easier to practice and set up practice trials at home. And the other thing you want to do is you want to remember to be patient. Behaviors will not change overnight. It's not going to be a one-time fix-all solution. It's going to take time, and it does take a parent thinking, okay, I have to practice this behavior today and then practice again tomorrow, and then having the family practice together and caregivers practice together. So what I did was looked at those scenarios that we looked at before, and we went through the ABCs of those behaviors. So I went through and asked, and we'll answer those questions. And let me just get this one. Okay. So when we're looking at the scenario, after school, Johnny's playing outside on the playground structure. Mom is sitting on a bench and tells Johnny it's time to go. Mom gets up to get Johnny. So what is going on? Johnny is playing outside at the playground. Where is he? He's at the playground. When is it? And actually, where is Mom? Mom is sitting on a bench when she gives the instruction. When? This is after school. Who is there? It's Johnny and his mom. So if we're looking at proactive strategies, we already have some good ideas. We know that when she gets up, he begins to run away and she chases him. So the function, if we're looking at the B, Johnny says, no, and refuses to go, and he begins running away. The consequence is Mom chases Johnny and repeatedly tells him to stop. She finally catches him after a couple of rounds around the playground. If we're looking at the function of behavior, one, the function of behavior is attention. Mom chased him. This may have been fun for him. Even though she was telling him stop, that also may be seen as a reprimand, but also as attention. Two, it also served as he received an activity. He got to play a game of chase with Mom, even though Mom was chasing him more out of safety. Three, he was able to escape or delay an activity. He escaped leaving the park. So that behavior of telling Mom no and running away had several functions: to get attention, to get a game of play, and to escape Mom leaving the park. So to set it up, before Johnny even runs away, we want to look at some proactive tools that we could use. Now, looking at this, the triggers were playing outside. Mom was sitting on the bench. Some proactive tools you could use is give Johnny clear expectations. First, we're going home, and then we're going to have a yummy lunch. So phrasing it in a positive way, let him know what the expectations are, the clear expectations. If you just say, we're going to leave, he may not know what's going to happen next. So in order to have more success is let him know, we're going to go home, but we're going to go do something. And I always try to follow it up with maybe something good or fun if it's possible. So we'll say, first we're going to go home, then we're going to have a yummy lunch. The next thing we look at is giving Johnny warnings to playing. He's having a great time playing outside, giving him transition warnings to start slowing down. We're going to 5 more minutes, and then we're going to go. You have 3 more minutes, 1 more minute. So he has a warning time and can start winding down his play. Number 3, you're looking at being prepared, because one of the triggers, and when we're looking at it, was Mom was sitting on the bench when she told Johnny that it was time to go, and then he began to run. What she could do is, before she gives the instruction that it's time to go, is stand close to Johnny so that you can prevent the running away, so you can catch him and that you don't have to play in that game of chase and stop, and look into those safety issues. The next thing you can do is to teach those replacement behaviors and practice transitions and reinforce him for complying. At home, practice transitions in the backyard. Come inside, great job, and then let him go back outside. And it might not even serve a purpose just going in and out and just reinforcing him following your instructions. okay, time to come back inside. Great job. Go play outside on the swing again. So he's getting reinforced for following instructions from his mom. Another thing you might want to do is teach Johnny to ask for games of chase with parents. He likes games of chase. Chase him. Say, Mom, chase. Chase and reinforce him for asking for chase by chasing him and laughing and having a good time. Because if you're looking at behaviors, you want to look at the functions, behaviors, and then triggers. So we looked at the triggers and the proactive tools that we could use, using a first, then contingency, giving a transition cues, being prepared, and then teaching some replacement behaviors, teaching him how to follow transitions and teaching him how to ask appropriately for a game of chase instead of chasing at an inappropriate time when he's trying to escape his mom. So those are some proactive tools before you get to the running away behavior. If we're looking at the other scenario that we gave previously with Sarah, who was playing with her dolls, the scenario was, it was bedtime. Sarah was playing with her dolls in her bedroom. Mom asked Sarah, it's time to come brush your teeth. So what was going on? Sarah was playing with dolls in her bedroom. Where was she? She was in her bedroom. When was it? It's bedtime. Who was there? Sarah and her mom. And she asked her to brush her teeth. Sarah's behavior was, Sarah protested no and continued playing with her dolls. She ignored her mom and continued playing. The function of the behavior, look, mom says, okay, you can play for 5 more minutes, and then you have to brush your teeth. So if we're looking at the function of the behavior, what Sarah got to do was she got an activity. She got to play with her dolls. The other function of the behavior was that she got to delay the activity of brushing her teeth. So her behavior for protesting and delaying activity is reinforced. Before we get to that, we look at the proactive strategies before we even get to Sarah protesting, is that we want to give her, again, clear expectations before we even deliver the instruction, let's brush our teeth. So give her the contingency first. First we're going to brush our teeth, then we're going to pick a book to read. And usually we'll say, oh, okay, we know Sarah likes to read books, so we're going to give her the contingency in a positive way. First we're going to brush our teeth, then we're going to read a book, instead of, if you don't brush your teeth, we're not reading a fun book. That way Sarah knows, okay, we're going to brush our teeth, and then I have something good to look forward to, a fun book that I like. I get to pick it out. Another thing that you might want to do as a proactive strategy is to read Sarah a social story, and you can make a social story about listening on the first try. Again, I'll point you to the Carol Gray about how to write social stories. And I do this a lot with children when I want to specifically address certain behaviors for social stories, such as listening on the first try, standing in line with your hands down, eating at a restaurant, looking while I'm talking to my friends, using my big boy voice, how to be a big kid. So a lot of times I will use the social stories with the target behaviors I want to see, particularly for Sarah, is listening on the first try. So I'll read the social story to Sarah even before we'll tell her that it's time to brush her teeth. Remember, listening on the first try. And then in combination, you can give Sarah the 5-minute cues or the transition cues. You have 5 more minutes to play with your dolls. 3 more minutes to play with your dolls. 1 more minute. Remember, we want to listen on the first try. So giving her clear expectations of what you want. And during the day, you want to reinforce her throughout the day when she does listen on the first try. Sarah, go get your shoes. Great job listening on the first try. Okay, it's time to come upstairs. Great job listening on the first try. And we know that Sarah likes to play with her dolls, is give her several opportunities throughout the day to play with her dolls so that she doesn't, at the end of the day, so she's not set up at the end of the day. That's the only time she has access to her dolls, and it's hard for her to leave those dolls. So you want to make sure she's able to play with those dolls throughout the day so it's not, you don't set her up to fail and have a behavior. Now, if we're looking at the other scenario, and this is Brian with his family, and he's at a restaurant, it's dinner time, the restaurant is crowded, the family orders the food, and after 20 minutes, the food hasn't come. So what's going on? The family's decided to go out to dinner. They've ordered food. It has not come. It's been 20 minutes, and 20 minutes for some kids is a long time in a restaurant. 5 minutes, even 3 minutes could be a long time for a child in a restaurant. So where are they? They're in a crowded restaurant, and when is this occurring? This is occurring during dinner, during rush hour, where we know rush hour is busy, it's noisy, there's lots of people, there's waitresses running around, orders might take a longer time to come in, and who is there? It's all of Brian's family. So if we're looking at proactive strategies, we already know, okay, it's a crowded restaurant. Some things you might want to do is go to the restaurant when it's less likely to be busy. This isn't an easy skill for many of the children, is to go to restaurants. So definitely go when it's less busy. The waitress will have more time to attend to you. You might be able to get your food out quicker. Some other things when we're practicing going to the restaurant is some of the parents that we work with, they may call ahead and place the order ahead of time and say, we'll be there by such and such. Can you have it ready by this time? Or if you get to the restaurant, already know what you want to order and place your order as soon as you're seated. Other things that you can do to make the restaurant experience a little bit more pleasant is let your waitress or waiter know that you may have to leave quickly, that you do want to get your food out as quickly as possible. Other things is, if you do have to wait, is be prepared. Bring activities that are reinforcing and that are fun for Brian to engage in while he waits. There is always going to be some amount of time that someone has to wait for their food. Before going to the restaurant, you can come up with a picture schedule for Brian and show him what is going to happen. First, we're going to sit down, then we're going to order, then we're going to play games, then our food's going to come, and then we're going to pay the bill, and then we're going to go home. So he has a clear expectation of what's going to happen during his restaurant experience, and he knows how he can monitor how far he is towards completing his schedule. Definitely when he is sitting, is reinforce him, intermittently reinforce him through his when he's waiting. I like the way you're sitting. You're doing a great job sitting and waiting like a big boy. At home, things that you could do is practice waiting for food when it's lunchtime and dinner time and reinforce him. So sitting, and you want to start small. Pick one, even waiting a minute might be something to wait for food for his lunch, and then extending it to 2 minutes and then getting his food, 3 minutes and then getting his food, and reinforcing him for sitting appropriately. Also at home, other things that you can teach him is teach him to ask for walking breaks to go outside when he is waiting. Because if you're looking at the function of the behavior, if we're looking at C, after 20 minutes, Brian begins to tantrum. The function of the behavior is escape. He got out of waiting. He also got an activity. He got to walk around the block. However, if we were able to teach him an appropriate replacement behavior of asking to go outside, then we possibly could have avoided this behavior of a tantrum. So after about 20 minutes, teaching him or even prompting him, I want to go for a walk, and then reinforcing that behavior instead of going through a tantrum could possibly avoid that behavior. So you're looking at, when you're looking at these strategies, you're looking at proactive strategies that you can use before the behavior even occurs. And then you're also looking at the function of the behavior for the children to teach the appropriate replacement behaviors for these children. Some examples that we had, and I don't think this is going to go through, I had several examples of picture schedules that you could use. A lot of the children that we work with, we will give them picture schedules just based on what their needs are. It could be some of them do a combination of textual and picture cue schedules. So this one was of a child who was going to the bowling alley, and we wrote down things that the steps that he would do to go to the bowling alley. Hello, may I bowl? I need a size blank size shoes. Do you have a three size ball? And he would, we laminated this for him, and he would check off the steps that he completed. I don't think you're able to see the other picture schedules, but some of them were as easy as a whiteboard and numbered and written. Some of our children are readers, so we'll write down, first we're going to do snack, then we're going to do recess, and then it's time to line up to go outside. And they're able to erase with their finger on the whiteboard. Others are, we may use a vertical sketch picture schedule system using Mayor Johnson Pictures, where they can see, first we'll do a worksheet, then we'll have tickles, next we will string beads, last we'll go outside. And as they're completing each activity, they get to pull off each picture as they're done, so they can monitor their progress towards completing their schedule. Other things that we talked about for the proactive strategies are token systems. It's a good way for children to monitor their progress towards the goal. I need 8 dino stickers to get a piggyback ride. And usually what we see is I'll put a star or a box there, and I might write on the box with a – everything's laminated, and I like to use dry erase markers. So if the child is a reader, I'll write the word piggyback ride. If the child is not a reader, I may use – a picture and Velcro a picture on there, or I might draw a picture of a that symbolizes piggyback ride. And each time they complete a target behavior listening on the first try, I'll give them a dinosaur sticker. Great job, you get a dino sticker. 2 more stickers and we get a piggyback ride. I like the come here. I like the way you're listening on the first try. Great job. Until they get all their stickers and get their reinforcers. And usually what I'll do is I'll make the token systems based on what the child likes. If a child likes dinosaurs, we'll make it about dinosaurs. Trains, we'll use trains. Other proactive strategies that I like to use are the social stories. And I adapt them based on the children's needs. I may simplify them. Again, a good resource is the Carol Gray Carol Gray, she has several books about social stories that are pre-written. For us, I'll write them out and simplify them just based on a child's needs. We've written social stories for getting ready for school, how to get ready for school, listening on the first try, eating at a restaurant, how to look at my friends when I'm talking, how to share with my friends when we're playing a game. So it's targeting the skills that you would like to see in your child and reviewing that with them. Other things we look at are using is so a child can monitor how much time. Sometimes I'll have children have visual timers. This one is a good one because it is a countdown timer. It's not very loud. It will has a slight, very slight ding when the time is up, but you can move the timer, and as the timer expires, the red disappears until there's zero time, and the child can look at it. You can use it in school environments and home environments, so the child knows 5 more minutes till we have to clean up, and they can see how much time they have left to play. So it's not as much as a shock when it's time to clean up. They know how much time, and they can monitor how much time before they need to clean up. When you're looking at your child's behavior, there's many questions that have come in, is that I encourage you to do the antecedent behavior consequence pattern worksheet with your child's behavior. There's so many scenarios of what children can do, and it really is going to be parents and caregivers and professionals taking the ABC pattern data to figure out why the child does certain behaviors, and then being able to figure out, okay, these are the triggers, so we can use these proactive strategies to manage these behaviors. The child does engages in tantrum behavior to get out of sitting at the restaurant. So teaching the child an appropriate way to ask to get up, to leave a restaurant or to go for a walk. So oftentimes I will give this to parents and they will fill this out for me. And then they can start seeing the patterns of the child's behaviors. Oh, he always tantrums when this happens. Or he tantrums whenever I change a routine or he screams when I slide his cup over, which you break a routine or a pattern that they have. So looking at the ABC pattern, definitely trying to identify the triggers and figure out why the child does the behavior they do. That's a very important part to being able to manage those behaviors. If we're looking at some of the resources that we have and the ones that we talked about are looking at thegraycenter.org using the Carol Gray social stories. I use Mayor Johnson to create some of the picture schedules that I make, but also I will use just pictures that I'll find off the internet, or I will draw pictures, or they could be pictures that you take off of your camera that you can make into a picture schedule. If you're looking at some good learning materials and the visual timers that examples that I had, there's Different Roads to Learning, which is www.difflearn.com. They have a lot of good timers and learning materials for children on the spectrum. So let me look at some of the questions that – there was a lot of questions that came in regarding behaviors. And looking at them – I'm looking at some of them and reviewing these. Okay. So I'm just going over them right now. Okay, so I have a question, and it says from Maria, from San Jose, I hear you use what a big kid or what a big boy or girl. My son does not want to be grown up or be called a big boy. Can you help me with this? When I use these phrases, a big boy or big girl, I really look at the parents and I say, you don't have to exactly label it big boy or big girl. It could be anything, just to identify the tone of voice that you want to hear. So usually this is my just general generic big boy when we're correcting whining behavior. We have a child right now. He is able to communicate his needs. However, he does it in a whining voice. So we just termed it big boy. But you could say – you could use any term that you would like. So, I mean, it really doesn't have to be my term for big boy. It's just a generic term for that, if you're trying to get away from him not being wanting to be a grown-up or a big boy. You can even just use, you need to use your words. And that would be the term for an appropriate tone of voice. You need to use your words. So you could use that and just escape that whole issue of being called a big boy or big girl. Another one is Tammy from Corona. It says, with my son who is 4, whether it be PECS or a token system, there's nothing that he loves so much that he will work for, do for, ask for, et cetera. This is including food. What do you do when there's nothing you know that he loves, no toy, et cetera? This is a hard one, and I do have families that I do have children that it may appear that they're not motivated for anything. And the questions that I look at are, do they have access to everything? Are they independent enough where they're able to get all of their own needs met by just climbing in the kitchen and getting things that they want on by themselves? So if that is the case, then we looked at restricting those items and putting them up so it encourages them to ask for more, more items and more objects. I have some children that will do that. They're very independent. They're able to climb all over the kitchen, find any cookie, find any piece of candy. And even though they are verbal, they do not ask and they do not use their words. So what we do is we, to encourage the language, we will restrict some of those items and put them away and prompt them to use their words, whether it be vocalization or picture exchange communication system. And we'll set it up that way so that they have more instances to talk and they're not able just to help themselves to everything that they have, that they want. Okay. Some other questions that are coming in are, this is Vicki DeVoe from Buffalo. This is Vicki from Buffalo, and it says, what about addressing back talk in older children on the spectrum? I know that the antecedent is my husband and his tone of voice, which my son, he is 9, interprets as back talk, so he back talks right back at him. For this, Vicki, I would encourage you to put the ABC, put this behavior in the ABCs and then go through this as a family, looking at it. What's the antecedent? And coming up with a strategy that everyone can follow. And that's really where you're able to address it. If one person's doing it one way and he doesn't back talk with another person, everyone has to get on the same page. So I would encourage the whole family going through the ABCs of behavior with back talk. And then coming up with a strategy that everyone can be consistent with and that everyone can agree with. Oftentimes I can give several strategies, and if only one person can follow it, then it's not a successful strategy. So when I'm looking at doing a behavior intervention plan and we're working with parent and family training, I talk with both parents and the family and what's realistic for the family before we come up with an intervention plan, because it will not work unless everyone's able to implement it consistently. So that's what I would encourage you to do, is to do the ABCs, find out what your proactive strategies would be and your replacement behaviors would be, and be consistent with those. More questions are coming in. Are Regina from Pennsylvania. A client of mine likes to push, kick, and bite his teacher when he hasn't reached his token achievement. Should the teacher engage in a game of pushing? Again, if you're looking at the behavior, these questions and scenarios is to put these behaviors in the ABC format. So what are the antecedents to the pushing and kicking? It's so hard for me it's hard for me to give a clear answer, because there's so much more information that I would need to say, oh, this, you would do X, Y, and Z. But if you do follow the ABCs, you can put in the antecedent before he pushes and kicks and bites. Ask those questions. What's going on? What's happening before he pushes and kicks and bites? How long did it take for him to reach his token system? Was the token system used over the entire day? Is he not earning enough reinforcers? What's going on before he pushes, kicks, and bites? When does it occur? Who is there? Who, what, where, when? And then you're looking at the consequences. And the question was, should the teacher engage in a game of pushing? And you can answer that by looking at what is the function of behavior. If she were to engage in a game of pushing, what would the child get out of it? He would get an activity. So that would probably reinforce pushing and kicking. So that probably you would want to stay with. That would just increase the behavior of pushing and kicking if the teacher engaged in that type of a game with them. Okay. Let's see. Okay. Another question from Dustin in Nevada is, my daughter does not like to time out. How can I implement time out when she hits or tantrums? She won't stay in her room, or if she does, she will kick the doors. Physically restraining her is difficult since she is 12 and high functioning. This is timeouts are what we call consequence manipulations after the behavior occurs. So what we want to do is try to avoid the behavior before she hits in tantrums. If she doesn't, if you are doing timeout, timeout is really timeout from any sort of reinforcement. So a lot of people will confuse timeout with placing her in a specific area or a room. Timeout could just be timeout from just reinforcement, whatever's reinforcing for her. If what's reinforcing is a person's attention, you could time her out right there. If you are using timeout, definitely making sure that she is safe, and safety is the first and foremost thing that you want to make sure that you're doing. But even before that is definitely figuring out, how did we get to the point of hitting and tantrum? What was the antecedents to the hitting and tantrums? What were the triggers for those behaviors? And catch her before she gets to that, before she gets to those behaviors. If she is tantruming, what were the functions of those behaviors? I know it would be very difficult to restrain a 12-year-old. So we're looking at a lot of the proactive strategies before you get to the hitting or the tantrums. And the number one thing is making sure that she's safe and you're safe. Okay, let's see. Some more questions are coming in. There's a question from Leslie in Canada. Can this work for toilet training as well? We have tried specific picture schedules, DVD, social stories, and he is inconsistently voiding in the toilet. Toilet training is a whole nother area. And some children, it's hard to, just from this question, it's hard to say what the function of the behavior is, but some children may not be ready for toilet training. There's so many other questions that I would, so much more information that I would have to know to even be able to answer that type of a question. So one of the things is he ready to be toilet trained to begin with? Is he showing the signs that he's ready to be toilet trained? Is he uncomfortable? Does he know when he is voiding? Is he aware when, if he's wearing diapers, if they're wet or if they're heavy or... Those are some of the questions that you want to ask first. Okay, so let's see. Some other questions that we have are, one question is from Sean from Bellflower. Can you address handling sensory-seeking behaviors, jumping, crashing, running in a circle, climbing? Yes, we do a lot of proactive strategies for these behaviors. A lot of the children that we work with will engage in stereotypic behavior. And what we try to do is practice sitting skills. So we'll practice teaching them how to sit quietly with their hands down and appropriately. However, on the alternate side, we'll teach them times that they can jump and crash and run in circles, and then we'll reinforce that as well. And we try to give them replacement behaviors to that and teach them appropriate times when they can engage in those behaviors. It might be difficult to eliminate those behaviors completely, so we teach children to engage in those behaviors in specific time frames. We worked with a child, and he was engaging in repetitive, scripted behavior from movies and computers that he watched. And this was probably the majority of his free time. And what we did was we taught him to take breaks. And if we taught him to ask for a break, and we taught him to go to his bedroom, and he could engage in that, those stereotypic behaviors as much as he wanted in his bathroom, in his bedroom, as loud as he wanted, until the timer went off, and then he would come back out. And we just taught him to continually ask for breaks where he could go into his bedroom, and we just reinforced him and let him do that. Then eventually we spread out the time between the breaks. So eventually he was doing, first he had a break, and then 1 minute of on-task time, then a break, and then 2 minutes, then 5 minutes of on-task time. And now he's at, he probably takes a verbal stereotypic break probably every hour when he needs it and is not engaging those behaviors outside of his bedroom now. So those are some of the things by teaching proactive strategies and teaching replacement behaviors to address some of the sensory seeking behaviors is teach them when they can engage in those behaviors and reinforce them and then teach them to ask for them. And that way you can minimize the impact overall throughout the whole day because it can be a lot when it's free time. The one last question that I have that's coming in, it's Jeanette from Torrance. What are good reinforcers? Should it be a food or activity? Good reinforcers are child-based. It's what the child likes, not what we think that they like, what they like. And you can find this out by doing choices, forced choices. You can put things in front of them and see what they grab for. And you can also observe what is the child engaging in throughout the day? What do they like to do during their free time? Those are ways to look at reinforcers is look at what they do, give them choices and see what they reach for, what they ask for, and continue to present different types of foods or different types of activities. So what might be reinforcing to one child is not reinforcing to the next child. So it's definitely child-based. And the other thing about reinforcers is that reinforcers, children may get tired of reinforcers over time, so you want to have a wide selection of reinforcers. I can only eat so much chocolate cake before I don't want any more. And it might be a good reinforcer for a while, but then after a while, I've already had so much of it, I don't want any more. So you want to have a wide selection of reinforcers that may range from food, drinks, to activities and games that you play. Let me see if there's any other ones that are coming in. Another great question, and I'll try to wrap this up, is Heidi from Maryland. What about when neurotypical siblings like to set the autistic child off to get the parents' attention? This is when, again, definitely putting the ABC, your child's ABC pattern into perspective, but also doing parent and family training. A lot of the times, maybe the neurotypical siblings do not know how to interact appropriately with their autistic sibling. So we'll practice and give them ideas about how to engage the child. But with the question that you have is they're trying to get the parents' attention. So teaching your neurotypical children how to get your parents' attention the appropriate way versus having your autistic son or daughter engage in behaviors. So teaching your neurotypical children the appropriate ways to gain the parents' attention. That's a great way of doing it. And then encouraging positive interactions with the family. We do a lot of game playing just depending on what the age range of the children are. And we do it we've done parent and family training from 5-year-olds to 9-year-olds to 13-year-olds and 14-year-olds. But it does, neurotypical siblings may have to have some things explained to them and teach them ways to appropriately interact as a family together instead of separating them apart.